Great. So welcome to Creating Ripples, the program that showcases inspirational women over 50 across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They may make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing the amazing Gillian Haslam, who actually isn't over 50, and I know that because I'm looking at her and she looks about 30. However, you will agree, I'm sure, when you listen to her story that she is so incredibly inspirational that she slipped under the age net. If there was ever a truth in the adage that truth is stranger than fiction, it would apply in the case of Gillian, who was born in Calcutta to British parents in post-colonial India. Gillian faced a bruising childhood of extreme poverty, malnutrition, and disease. She lived through the deaths of four siblings and some appalling instances of racial abuse. Her rise from the depths of despair and misery to wealth and international celebrity status is an inspirational story of vindication and coming home. Gillian's is an amazing tale of a gritty climb to success, wealth, international fame, and honour. Titled Indian.English, a memoir, her book is an international bestseller with extensive rave reviews in Indian and international press. The book describes her dark childhood, her ascent in the Indian and British corporate banking sector, and her move towards becoming a motivational speaker, trainer, and philanthropist of repute, catering to corporate organisations, social institutions, and the underprivileged in Europe and India. A popular media guest, Gillian has been featured on Channel 5, the BBC, The Independent, The Pioneer, The Times, The Telegraph, The Metro, Gulf News, and many other major media. She has also been invited to speak on TEDx in the UK. Gillian, thank you so much. You are a truly inspirational woman. What you have done is utterly awe-inspiring, and I feel deeply humbled whenever I speak with you, and thank you so much for being interviewed.
Oh, thank you, Katie. You know, I do not know how I'm going to live up to all of that, but I'm going to try. But thank you so much.
Well, it's true. I mean, just there are some people who, when you cross paths with them in your life, actually make you just stop in your tracks and press the pause button on yourself and think, wow, you know, I thought I'd heard it all, but wow. And you are one of those women. So do you want to share with us a bit about where you came from?
Well, Katie, when as far back as I can remember, my little sister and myself, as before I was born, my parents had already lost four children, twins, Kimberly and Alan, and two girls, Minnie and Carol, and all before the ages of 6 months, to malnutrition and poverty. Goodness. And then I came along, and my sister Vanessa came along, and my elder sister came along. But I just believe that we were, you know, in a row of, you know, sometimes people are in line to inherit something, mm-hmm. you know, a house and jewelry and whatever. I just feel like we were always in a queue to inherit death, because that's the queue we were in. It just kept happening to us one after the other. And I just consider myself very lucky that I wasn't taken. I was spared, you know, in a way. And I feel very grateful for that. But soon after that, my little sister Vanessa, myself, we basically went from house to house, living behind people's houses in their verandas, under their steps, as is depicted in the cover of my book, Indian English. Yeah. And sometimes people kept us, sometimes people asked us to move on, and sometimes people fed us, sometimes, you know, the local darwans, as they call them, you know, the guards of local places fed us. Sometimes people felt sorry and just gave my mother, you know, one little roti and a little curry. And she used to bring it home to us under the steps, and we used to eat it up, and we used to ask her, have you eaten? And she used to say, my friend made me eat so much I can't eat anymore. But actually she hadn't eaten for days on end. So that's really where, you know, we came from. So my first home, as far back as I can remember, was under those steps for I don't know how long. And then we were put with this lady, Mrs. Cleophas, who actually didn't like me for some reason. She loved my sister because my sister's very blonde, blue-eyed, or whatever. And so she used to lock me in this toilet of cockroaches every single evening, hundreds and thousands of cockroaches.
Oh my
And she
goodness.
used to put me in and put off the light and close the door. And that made me a very, very, very nervous child. And then after that, my dad recovered after a heart attack, and we moved to our second home, which was in a proper slum where almost 3,000 people shared three toilets. So you can imagine it was there was no electricity, hardly any electricity, no water. We had to fill water from a tube well from the back of the building. It was just very, very difficult living. We used to be left alone on our own in a room 8 by 10 feet. Myself, my little sister, Vanessa, and looking after two even littler ones, who was a baby, Susan, who was brought home from the hospital after three days, and the doctors had given up on her and said she's not going to make it. She's too badly malnourished. And then my little brother, who was just two at the time. So it was very, very hard for us. And it
how
felt
old
as though...
were you then, Gillian? When
eight.
You were
I was
eight then.
When my sister was brought home from
and
the
you're
hospital.
The eldest.
I was the eldest, so I cooked, I washed, I cleaned, I looked after the little ones, I did all the work, I did everything as a mother, a proper mother would do. And in fact, I've even brought both of them up to where they are today. But it really felt at that time that the world had given up on us, the country had definitely given up on us, and we were not on any scheduled caste or scheduled tribe lists, and it was as though we were just forgotten. Katie, it was as though we didn't exist. So that's where I come from, really.
I think you are the absolute mistress of the understatement when you said it was quite hard. I mean, I don't think anybody, I certainly cannot even begin to imagine what it was like. You know, just from that kind of almost throwaway statement you said of being locked in a toilet with thousands of cockroaches with the light turned off. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the horror and the fear that you... How old were you when that happened?
I was very little. I must have been about 4 or 5. But
how long did that go on for? How long was that experience for?
For months on end. And I've written about it in my book where when my mom used to come to see us, she would only be filled with gratitude. So she used to say, I hope you're saying your please and thank yous and being grateful to the lady for looking after you.
Right.
So we never got a word in.
Right.
But then one fine day, my mother came and I just wet myself. I just couldn't handle it anymore. And that actually stayed with me throughout my teenage years because I was scared of my own shadow. I was so nervous I could hardly talk. My sister still teased me till this day that how on earth have you done all this? It's just not, it's not you. It has to be someone else, you know. But honestly, Katie, I was very, very scared. I was scared to swim. I was scared to dance. I was scared to drive. I was scared to mix with anyone. I was scared about anything. That's what that trauma did to me.
And it is absolute trauma, isn't it? I mean, it's trauma to the very core of your being.
Yeah.
I mean, you have obviously been hugely successful, come out the other side of that. But as you were a child going through that experience, how did you find that inner resilience to continue?
You know, my mother was a highly, highly charitable person. She used to bring any man off the street. He could be having no slippers, mud between his toes, no clothes. And she would bring him back to this little room in the slum and say, he's staying with us. And we would say, Mom, we are all girls. You can't just bring a man off the street and say he's staying with us. And she used to say, that's it, he's staying. And we used to say, when Dad comes home, we're going to tell him and we're going to ask him. So when my dad used to return, we used to say, Dad, we can't have a man staying with us. And my dad used to say, children should be seen and not heard. Your mother's word is final. He stays. So that's how charitable my mother was. But my dad, on the other side, was a man who taught us with songs and quotations and things like that. So I had a boyfriend, I remember, once when I was about 14 or 15, and he never wanted to be seen with me. Every time we would come out of the school gate, he would say, "No, no, no, just don't be seen with me." And I never understood why. But my dad used to, I used to go home and say to my dad, "What's wrong with me? Is there something wrong?" And my dad used to say, I could get into all the details, but to be honest, to tell you very mildly, sit down and listen to Dolly Parton's song, you know, Chicken Every Sunday. And he didn't really have to explain anything to us, Katie. The song did it all.
Okay.
You know, and he used to use quotes like, you know, from William Barclay that, you know, endurance is not just the ability to do a hard thing, but to be able to turn it into glory. So everyone endures stuff. Everyone goes through stuff. But how many can really take that endurance and turn it into glory? If you can do that, then people want to listen to you. If not, don't tell me your story. You know, so I learned from all of that, and I think that's what stayed with me.
I mean, it's a strong message, it's a powerful message, and some people do have the ability to turn in that level of endurance into glory. A lot of people may have the ability, but don't have the belief that they
yes.
have the ability.
True.
So how do you in your work help people unlock that ability within them when they don't believe they have it?
Again, Katie, I think, you know, it, when you have to unlock something in yourself, I think it, again, it's a quote that my dad again loved to use, a quote by Christopher Robinson, and it says, you have to promise me that you're braver than you believe, and you're stronger than you seem, and you're smarter than you think. If you can believe that, then the world is your oyster. But you have got to believe that you have everything within you. You know, and my mom used to say, God has given us many gifts, many, many gifts. But the biggest gift he's given us is the power of choice. You have the power not to believe that you're worthless, or you have the power to turn nothing into something. You have got to make that choice. Unfortunately, I'm not Tinkerbell. I can't jump into your mind and tinker it a little bit for it to work. My
sprinkle on the fairy dust. It doesn't work like
yeah.
that, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we do all have choices. We absolutely do all have choices. How do you work with people? And I'm talking from my own personal experience here of when I've worked, because I absolutely agree with you. We all have choices, and it's taking ownership and responsibility. We can sink or we can swim. I have come across people in the decades that I've been working on kind of the personal self-development of people who are actually much happier staying where they are. And they make the choice not to improve their self-belief, to look at their self-confidence, to take ownership. Because they have, whatever you, I don't know how you would phrase it, they have maybe got addicted, got used to presenting a certain mask, and they are frightened. Even though they know it's not working in their favor, it's not beneficial, there is an element of safety in staying where they are because yes. they're used to it. It becomes the norm, so it becomes what they expect. And also the people around them are very happy keeping them where they are, because if they were to change and grow and expand, the people around them start to feel threatened. So it's easier to stay small than it is to come out of your chrysalis and break out your wings and fly off and become that fabulous butterfly. How do you work with people who are maybe locked, trapped in that space?
I think firstly, I use my own story because it's absolutely real and it's exactly what I've been through, and documentaries on YouTube can absolutely, you know, demonstrate that we've done videos of where I actually was locked up in which toilet, and it still stands still this day.
Does it? Oh my gosh.
And I can show evidence of our four siblings that passed away and the poverty we've been through and all of that. But I think what then I go into is actually showing people, and I think I've done a little bit of a small YouTube video on the power behind the human brain and mental resilience. It's on YouTube. It's only 10 minutes.
Right.
But I basically show people how our brains work, how the neurological connections build up, and how that forms habits, and how that forms us being who we are, and how we can unravel all that, and how the neurotransmitter GABA moves in. If you don't use it, you kind of lose it, and how it cleans up what you don't need. But I show it in a lot of pictures and a lot of visuals, and very soon after that, I've had a girl come up to me and say, Jillian, up to yesterday, I wanted to take my own life, but today I don't.
Wow.
Because I now know that it's self-inflicted.
Wow.
I can change that. If you go onto YouTube again and you look at some testimonials from teachers and heads of departments, you'll see the teachers say that to you. And that's what happens after I do such a course or such a speech. Because you've got to show it to them, you know, in absolute honesty, A, using yourself, and B, using actual scientific facts to show them that this is what's happening to you. And the change is phenomenal, I cannot tell you.
Phenomenal, completely. That's amazing, and I will check out those YouTube, and you just give us a link at the end of the interview so people can go and find them. We're still in the situation though that people get it. They see that YouTube video, they say, okay, yeah, I get it. I know I can do this. I can absolutely do this.
Yeah.
There is still the potential though that they may have to walk away from certain people in their lives who are still trying to keep them locked in that old space. So how do we, when I say you, I'm talking about us collectively, how do people manage that? So when they've made the changes, they've realised they can take ownership and responsibility, they've changed themselves, and they go back and everybody that they, in their lives, is still in the old space. How do they manage that?
Katie, I'm sure you've been there and I've been there for sure. So, you know. But you know, I'd like to use a metaphor of ants.
Okay.
If you think of ants, you can take a giant hill of salt and just a little bit of sugar and mix it and put some ants there, and ants will actually take away the sugar and leave the salt.
Good Lord.
They'll do that.
Good Lord.
Yeah, they will do that because they are programmed to take away what's good and leave the bad.
Okay.
Right? So by virtue of that metaphor, we as human beings also have to understand, as in Warren Buffett's quote, you know, associate yourself with bigger and better people and you will drift in that direction. We have to understand that come what may, we have got to get negativity out of our lives in order for us to succeed. That negativity sometimes could even come by way of family. You know, as Wayne Dyer said, friends are God's way of apologizing for your family members. Yeah?
Harsh, but true.
Right?
Yeah.
But that is true. And sometimes you could also face that with friends. You could face that with people you've loved in school and they hate you for being who you are today.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You have got to find it within yourself to understand that if 2,000 or 3,000 people don't like you or they're negative and they're trying to keep you down, there's a world of 7 billion people out there who are going to love you.
And you get what you focus on. So, you know, focus on the people who are coming with you and admire you and want to be like you. Don't focus on the ones who are trying to keep you small.
Yeah, but Katie, look at, if you take a CEO, for example, mm-hmm. he opens the papers one morning and he puts on the TV, he's the most hated person in the country for what he's done to people. He walks into the bank and everybody's looking at him, you know, as he's the biggest crook walking. How does somebody like that deal with it? They deal with it because they're trained to deal with that, trained to deal with negative publicity. But if he's going to walk into his office and think, oh my gosh, the world hates me, how's he going to perform? They don't let it affect them. They just have one thought in mind, the job at hand, the task at hand. So if you are looking at your life as, oh, it's just a life and I'll just, then you will worry about these people. But if you are looking at your life as a passion and there's a task that you need to deliver before it's too late, you will not worry about all these people and or things or negativity. And you will think, no, come what may, whether it's obstacles, whether it's negativity, whether it's someone trying to keep me down, I've got to get over those obstacles in order to get to that goal. It depends on how strong your passion is for what you're doing.
And that is really key, isn't it? And certainly, I'm sure you do, when I work with people, they say, oh, I can't X, Y, and Z. I say, let's get back to your why.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? Because if your why is really firmly embedded and if your why is strong enough and compelling enough, the how will take care of itself. And people get too wrapped up with the how and they forget the why. And the why is our passion, isn't it? Our passion and our desire. And I remember when I was retraining back in my late 20s, I was training in a completely new profession. And I was having a lot of those limiting self-beliefs, yes. I can't do this, I'm going to be rubbish at this, I'm never going to learn it. And the fantastic woman who was scary beyond belief, but incredibly motivating, said to me, Katie, it is not your ability that will dictate your success, it is your desire. And if your desire is strong enough, you will achieve whatever you put your mind to. And I have never forgotten that statement. So she said, how much do you want to do this? And why are you doing it? And once I'd got over myself and got out of my own way and put those negative, okay, why did I sign up to do this profession? Why am I retraining? And once I got back in touch with the passion, the how took care of itself.
Absolutely, Katie. You know, truer words were never spoken. I would say the absolute same thing about myself. Or, you know, there's a 90-year-old woman I read about yesterday who's just finished her competent communication manual at Toastmasters.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interviewing an 82-year-old lady next Sunday on my own radio show, and she's 82, absolutely blind, and has just finished her writing a whole and completed her novel, her own novel, just because her dad put a book in her hand when she was 11 years old saying how to write a novel. And she's completed it. But that's with having 9 people to care for and being completely blind. That was her desire, to finish a novel and leave a legacy behind. So how badly did she want it?
How badly did she want it? I remember when I've been speaking with you before, there's something that you said to me that really struck true, and it stayed with me. It was the comment that you made, it is never your fault if you are born poor, it is always your fault if you die poor. It was, whoa! Okay, Gillian, just give it to me, why don't you?
That is true. Actually, Justin Bieber used that as well.
Oh, really?
In one of his speeches, but it's not his originally.
Ah.
But it is true. Yeah, it is your fault. It isn't your fault if you are born poor, but it is your fault if you die poor. That is very, very true. It's a very strong statement. And that just goes to show, Katie, that we all have the ability to do something about it.
We do. Yeah. I can't believe we've been talking for nearly 23 minutes already. It always feels like, whenever I chat with you, it feels like 2 seconds. It's ridiculous.
I know.
So what's the future hold for you? What are you planning?
Well, Katie, I'm just currently working on the movie. We've got a great Hollywood producer now on board.
So exciting.
We've got a screenwriter, we've got a director, and we are working on all the funding and all the castings and stuff like that.
So this is your life story?
Yes, this is on the book in English.
So. This is beyond exciting.
I know.
Who is going to be playing you, Gillian?
I don't know. A lot of people, you know, the producer wants Kate Winslet to play me and things like that.
She would be fantastic.
Yes, I know. But, you know, to be honest, Katie, my sister said to me yesterday, just imagine this is happening. And I'm like, I can't imagine. For me, it's just another ordinary day. She said, don't be so boring. And I said, that's how I am. I have never been this person to kind of, you know, let success get to me or anything like that happening. Thankfully, I'm more grounded than that. And I always like to, you know, I'm really at my best when I'm with the kids. At my study centers that, you know, have in India. On the 24th of December, that's where I'm spending Christmas with them.
Fantastic.
And 25th, I'll spend it with the aged. On the 26th, I'll spend it with all the youth at all our centers. That's where I come to life. And, you know, they say Christmas is spent with the people you love. So that's where I am all this every year. So what I'm doing, just writing my next book, The Irrepressible Mind, working on the movie, working with my charities, and basically trying to help anyone and everyone, you know, I can, as much as I can, with the little time, you know, I have left, basically.
Fantastic. We've got 30 seconds left. I mean, if anybody was a gift to the world, Gillian, it's you. And what you give to the world is absolutely phenomenal. You are certainly creating the most amazing ripples with your very presence on this planet. So bless you for that. And I want to interview you again, if I may, when we have more information about the film. so you can tell us who has been cast and how it's all happening. That would be fantastic. How can people find out more about you? What's your website? What are the YouTube links?
I think if you just Google me.
Just Google you. Yeah, pages come up. Just put in Gillian. Yeah. We'll put all of that on the website, which would be fantastic.
You know, Gillian Haslam. The book and the movie, you can see all the trailers at indianenglishthebook.com. All my charities are indiatrustfoundation.com. On Google you can find anything.
And I will make sure that's on the website. Gillian, bless you. Thank you so much. We are out of time, sadly, but thank you so much for your time. Incredibly generous.
An absolute pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.
This has been Katie Day with Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, and courageous. We have some amazing women coming up in future weeks, so make sure you listen in.